It's the weekend, and you have financial questions that need answering. That can only mean one thing. It's time for Jill on Money, the show that takes the mystery out of your finances. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money. It is the summer. It's hot. It's humid. I think it's officially, is it hurricane season yet? I think it is. Might want to go living on the East Coast. Maybe you go check out that policy. Always love those questions about insurance. You never get a property insurance question until after a terrible thing has happened. Might as well look at it before something bad happens. Come on. Well, we are delighted that you're joining us today. We are very excited for the summer. We have a slew of awesome interviews that are going to come up throughout the summer, and Mark is busy booking away, and we're busy putting a bunch of things in the can, getting ready for you. So there you go. It'll be a fun summer. If you'd like to get on the air with us, it's very easy. A couple of ways to do it. 855-411-JILL. That's our phone number. You can email us, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Don't forget to check out our podcast. If you can't get enough of us, Better Off. You can get it on Apple or Stitcher or Google Play or SoundCloud. I don't know if SoundCloud for too much longer, by the way, because I heard SoundCloud laid off like 40% of its staff. But we'll have to check that out. Follow us on Twitter at Jill on Money and check out our YouTube channel. Search Jill Schlesinger. Let's start with a call. First up, we've got Albert on the line from Connecticut. Hi, Albert. Welcome to Jill on Money. What can I do for you?
Good morning, Jill.
Hi.
Well, it's a little bit of both money and flood insurance.
Okay.
FEMA remapped our whole area and put us on in a flood zone. And I'm the only one on the street by about a foot of my house. And it's on a little pond, a little lake, but they made the assessment from 20-year-old maps, 15-year-old maps, and within the last 10 years, a new controlled dam was put on my lake from the town by the Army Corps of Engineers. And The bottom line is I can go through FEMA's what they call LOMA map amendment application, but I would fail.
Why?
Under their terms, because of being at a certain height, and the corner of my house still is X amount of feet from the lake.
But they don't accept the fact that the Army Corps of Engineers put the dam on the lake?
I tried contacting them on a dozen occasions, and nobody said. They said you can write it in, but they have to go by the maps that were
gone. What a drag. Okay.
So it's such a red tape that, you know, I asked the town, could you contact FEMA for me? And they said, oh, they'd have to do tens of thousands of dollars worth of remapping just to get this overturned. And so I'm like in a real dilemma.
But hold on a second. Let me ask you a quick question. How much is the flood insurance? Because sometimes FEMA flood, I mean, maybe it would protect you. How much is it annually?
It's $2,300 a year.
Okay, so that's not small potatoes.
And I've been paying for about 6 or 7 years, but I have $20,000 left. $17,000 left on my mortgage.
Okay.
We're thinking of trying to pay it off this year.
Okay.
To save the money.
Okay. But wait a minute. Are you saying you want to pay off the mortgage because the mortgage company requires you to carry the flood insurance?
Yes. And I shopped around for better ones. And
FEMA's always the best for the flood insurance. But I'm going to ask you a dumb question, Albert. What if you did get flooded? Wouldn't you be pissed that you didn't keep paying on this policy?
No, they drain our lake every year. We have a control valve on that dam.
Oh.
So they drain it for the algae.
Okay.
So if there was ever a chance of flood, it would have to come up about 6, 7 feet, 8 feet.
Okay,
and,
so you're
and
willing
there's
to
an overflow on the dam.
So you're basically saying to me you are willing to assume the risk of a flood because it's quite remote based on everything that's been done. So,
absolutely.
All right, do you have money in? Tell me about your situation. How old are you?
I'm 61.
Are you working still?
Part-time. My wife's still working full-time.
Good for you.
I got
to find me one of those situations. You always want to have your spouse working longer than you. How much money do you have in the bank?
We have about $300K.
Okay. What about retirement?
We have just a little bit more for that. Not much more.
What do you mean, like $350,000 in retirement also?
No. Just about 70,000, 80,000.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. Do you have a pension?
No.
And so she's still working, and you're saying out of the $300,000 that's in the bank account, you want to take $17,000 and pay off the mortgage, right?
Yes.
What's the interest rate on the mortgage?
6.
Pay it off.
Yeah.
Pay it off. And I'll tell you why. Because I think that, look, I'm a wimp. So I would always pay for insurance, even if I don't use it, because I get very anxious about these situations. But it sounds to me like you've done like a ton of work and you really do understand the risk. And now you got a 6% mortgage, which is, you know, probably a full 5% more than you're earning in your bank. And you have the money available. So pay off the mortgage, get rid of your flood insurance, and knowing that, look, something bad could happen. I know it's an outlier, but as long as you understand the risk, that's cool. But that's a crazy story to me. And it makes me nuts because you're right, it is red tape, but it's really weird because, you know, flood insurance through FEMA, you would think, would kind of communicate with the Army Corps of Engineers, which had done this other work. So I get your frustration, but since you have the money and your mortgage rate is so much higher than whatever you're probably earning in your bank, I'd go ahead and pay it off, assume the risk, be careful, keep working part-time. You don't have that much money that's floating around. And I wish you the best of luck. Go forth and prosper and don't do anything crazy in that pond. You know what I'm saying? I know. Well, Mark says, you know, Connecticut's going to have a massive flood and this guy's going to call back. I hope not. But it does sound like he really does understand the risk. It's one thing, you know, this is what happened in Superstorm Sandy, where there were a lot of people in New York who lived in areas that were, it would have been quite unlikely that they would get flooded out unless there was a storm of the century. And they got the storm of the century. And then they got flooded out. And now for some people who did not actually carry insurance because they had paid off their mortgage and they dropped it, or they were in the flood zone and they dropped it after that, they really were sorry. But, you know, if something really horrible has to happen to, and you understand that risk, then you are what they say, retaining the risk in the insurance business. Whereas when you buy insurance, what you're doing is you're transferring the risk. The risk is always there, right? With anything, with any loss, risk is there. So when you're buying flood insurance, all you're saying is I'm transferring the risk to the government. All right. Good luck, Albert. I hope now I'm feeling terrible because if there's a storm, I'm going to be putting Connecticut on my watch list for the hurricane season. Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com, and we will be right back.
It's Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Have a question? Call or email anytime, 855-411-JILL, or ask Jill at jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, give us a holler. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. And check out our YouTube channel. Thought I forgot about that, huh, Mark? I didn't. We are getting... But what's up with these bots that send me messages? It's so weird. It's the funniest thing. Anyway, check out our YouTube channel. Just search Jill Schlesinger and you will find it. Okay, I have a couple things to also keep in mind here. All right. You may not realize it because in the middle of all of this craziness over the last couple of months and political stuff, we talked a lot about the fiduciary standard, right? That's when you have to put a client's best interest first. And I just want to make sure that everybody understands that all this stuff is in flux right now. The Department of Labor had a fiduciary rule. It was required anyone who handles retirement assets or provided financial advice to retirement savers to work in their client's best interest and also to provide disclosure of conflicts when those conflicts exist. Now, so this was under the Obama administration. It was set to begin implementation on April 10th. Then when the Trump administration came in, they said, 60-day hold. We got to figure out how this is all going to impact the industry. After the delay, the new administration allowed phase one of the rule to go into effect on June 9th. But this is really, I call it fiduciary light, because the rule is not going to be enforced until the Department of Labor determines whether the second part of the rule, and that's where all the good stuff happens, the consumer legal protections, all that stuff, that was supposed to be implemented on January 1st. So now we have phase one in effect. Department of Labor said, we're not going to penalize anyone who doesn't follow the new standard, and we're kind of checking out whether we want to keep January 1st as our new, you know, phase two date. They've reopened the comment period for 30 days. And so there we have it. Okay. Meanwhile, in the House, they passed something called the Financial Choice Act, which would essentially repeal part of it, would repeal the fiduciary rule. All right. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen, and that goes to the Senate now, and I don't think it's really going to happen. But now, why am I talking about this? Because in the middle of all this, what do we have? We've got a new draft revision of the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards Professional Conduct. And that is completely separate, right? So everyone knows this. I say this all the time. I am a CFP. I'm actually the senior CFP board ambassador. So I do a lot of work with the board. I love the mark. I'm a big cheerleader. So what is the new? So currently, if you are a certified financial planner, if you've earned that designation, the fiduciary duty applies when you provide financial planning only. Okay? Planning. Like, I'm going to do a plan. However, there was always this like nebulous area at the CFP board because there were people who said, well, I didn't do planning. I just told someone to buy a mutual fund. So therefore, fiduciary doesn't apply to me, even if I am a CFP. Well, this new draft revision of the standards would now apply the fiduciary duty to those who are providing financial advice. Get the difference? One is planning and one is advice. So what does that mean? That means when a CFP professional, under this new standard, which is not adopted yet, but this is what they're talking about, when a CFP professional provides investment recommendations or asset allocation advice, he or she would be doing so under the fiduciary banner. And that's really important because that means that financial advice is becoming part of the fiduciary duty for CFPs. Now, why am I talking about this right now? Because guess what? Next week, there are a bunch of public forums that are scheduled. If you want to talk, I know we have a lot of CFPs. We also have a lot of people in the industry who listen to this show. So you should go to the CFP website, cfp.net, and you can find out whether these public forums are in your neighborhood. Also, there's a 60-day public comment period. It will conclude later in August, on August 21st. You can submit your comments to comments@cfpboard.org. So, check it out. Meanwhile, I get an email from Randy who asks, he's got $1 million in a traditional retirement account. What's a reasonable fee to pay a financial advisor to manage the account? For $1 million, it's, I would say, anywhere from 0.75% to 1.25% or so. That's not 100%, but I'm going to give you that. That's pretty close, what I would say. And I think that would be fair. That's certainly a fair amount. Of course, if you want, you could actually do it for a lot less. You can go to, like, the sponsor of my podcast is Betterment, and they charge 0.25% a year. So that's even if you have $1 million. So you may want to check that out. So a lot of choices out there now. I personally feel really excited about this because I think that this is a time when people have so many more choices and cheaper choices, you know? So there you have it. Mark, yeah, you sent me this question that we've already answered, but that's, it sounded familiar to you, didn't I? okay, I just had to... how much time do I have? I got to read this one. Okay, perfect. Here's one guy named Bob who says, I love your show. I listen whenever I can. I was listening when William from San Diego called. He and his wife make $15,000 a month with guaranteed health care for life. And they were government employees. I won't even talk about the $1.2 million in investments they have. I thought it's telling that the people that actually pay for these lavish retirement deals are your callers who are still working at 70 or living on $1,200 a month in Social Security. In case anyone calls and asks why the cities and states are broke and the country is $20 trillion in debt, you'll know exactly who to point to. Thanks for your good work, Bob. Hey, Bob, guess what? That's not why the country's broke. Totally not. The country is broke because of Medicare and Medicaid. And I have no beef with pension plans that are set up for people who serve municipalities, cities, states, government, as long as they are fair and we don't change the rules on them too late in their own lives. I really think that when you throw this around, this whole idea of, dear me, it's these terrible employees. And these people worked hard. I don't know exactly what they did for the government. For all I know, that they were like military people. Should we not have military people get their pensions? Should we not have civil servants get their pensions? I don't know. I don't like that scapegoating feel. I really don't. If you want to know why the country is broke, it is primarily because of Medicaid and Medicare. And so if you truly believe that that is a problem, that it needs to be reformed, I agree with you. I just don't think that you can lay that at the feet of the people who are basically using their retirement plans and working hard. Just how that's how I think about it. How much time? Okay, under one, but fast. Here's one guy who's mad that the Department of Labor fiduciary rule is causing somebody to change the nature of their accounts. They're buy and hold investors. And so anyway, he says, you know, this is not good. We talk about golf. The advice is not worth $5,000. Well, then go move your account. If he doesn't give you advice, then just move your account into a low-cost brokerage account. And don't worry about it. Good luck. 855-411-JILL. That's our phone number and our email address. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. Give us a holler. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be right back.
From rookie investors to savvy veterans, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Call now, 855-411-JILL, or email askjill@jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Hop onto our website, JillOnMoney.com, but don't judge it because Mark wants to totally rip it up and throw it out and start over again. But that said, there is some fun stuff in the blog area. Did you put that TV segment up from last week while you were in London watching Wimbledon? Anyway, there's a bunch of stuff in the blog that you should check out. Kiss for Summer, Keep It Simple, Stupid, Halftime for the Economy, my scorecard on what's going on. A cool thing about credit scores, remember John Alzheimer, I used that. I don't know, good stuff, all good stuff. Anyway, check it out, JillOnMoney.com. All right, now let me get back to some questions here. Here we go. This is from John. I recently transferred double E paper bonds into electronic. Let me just say something about that, because that is something that everybody should do. You go to treasurydirect.gov and you can check that out. It's really important because it's really hard to keep track of paper bonds. So treasurydirect.gov, do that. Okay. So now, says John, I want to cash them out and move them into something. So remember with double E bonds, the deal here is that you have, when you cash these things out, there could be tax that's due, because these are bonds that are building up in value because interest has been paid by making the value of the bond increase every year. So, for example, you might say, oh, I spent $1,000 on the bonds. When you cash them out, if they're worth $2,000, the difference between the $1,000 and the $2,000, that $1,000 differential, that's going to be ordinary. It's interest, so it's ordinary income to you. So before you cash it out, just anyone cashing out a bond, you should know that there could be a tax hit. Okay. So now, from John's perspective, his son's 13. He wants to open an account for his son. He says an IRA, a Roth IRA. Well, I don't think you can open a Roth or an IRA for your son unless he has earned income. That's the problem. So you won't be able to do that. You could put it into an IRA for yourself, which would just be your IRA, and maybe leave it to him. But maybe what you should do is open up a 529 college savings account if you want it. If, again, if the double E bonds were for him and they wanted to, you wanted them for his education, that's what I would do. I'd put it in a 529 account. But unless you have earned income, you cannot put money into a, you can't do it. You just can't make that happen. So, okay. Let's see. Here we go. I'm writing to you for guidance. Do you have a female financial advisor you could recommend? I want to know what to do with my annuities once I turn 70 and a half. Recently, I saw a gentleman who sells products through VALIC. That's an insurance company. His interest is moving my money to the product he sells. Good. I'm glad those bells went off. I also have an IRA sitting in a credit union. No interest. I'm married for 47 years, but listen to this, Mark. You like this. I'm married 47 years, but my husband refuses to help me or even go with me for even like an extra ear to listen. He's always said if he advises me and I lose money, he'd feel responsible, which is not true, but I can't argue with him. So where is this person living? In Florida. So who do we talk to in Florida who is a CFP? Oh, I know who. All right, I'm going to get back to this person. This is actually a great case for somebody who needs financial advice, because what is interesting about this, I think that when you look at the scope of everything that's happening, someone's trying to pitch you something, you get nervous, you do want somebody who is a fiduciary. You really do. So I would absolutely make sure that you see somebody who is a fiduciary, and you see somebody who can help you out and somebody who can really guide you. I think this is a good thing. So I'm going to follow up separately. I know who that person is. The name is escaping me, of course, but I do know who it is. You don't remember who it is? I got it. I'm going to figure it out. Okay, if you have questions about, you know, anything going on in your financial life and you need a second set of eyes, please do give us a holler. Stephen writes that he's considering an immediate payout annuity to supplement his other income streams. He's got a lump sum of $550,000 from a recent inheritance. The traditional approach would be for me and my wife to be co-annuitants. But if I add our son, and presuming our son would feed the annuity payment back to his mother for her use, we get a better payout. Yeah, this always happens, right? Because this is based on your life, you know, what your potential life expectancy is. So if you add the son, then that works, presuming, you know, he's only 30, but I do hope that, God willing, he would make sure his mother's taken care of. You get a higher payout. So what are the pitfalls? The pitfalls are you lose your 550 grand. Are you really sure you want to do this? I'm concerned that that's a lot of money to put into an annuity, even an immediate annuity. I would need to know more about your financial life, but I'm definitely a little bit worried, and I think that maybe before you buy this annuity, you may want to talk to a fee-only financial planner or to someone who's a fiduciary to really look at that. This is if this option is really the best one for you. So, all right, take a deep breath. Don't pile $500,000 into an insurance contract before you are absolutely, positively sure that this is the right investment for you. Okay? So, you know, be careful, please. Okay. You're listening to Jill on Money. The phone number here, 855-411-JILL. And our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
K, IRAs, refinancing. She covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Broadway
is dark tonight. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our number here, 855-411-JILL. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. And we really do like to hear from you. So send us your questions. Mark will even get you on the air live. Some of you are shy, so that's when we try to do the emails. And throughout the summer, Mark is making me swear that we're going to empty out the email box. What's my goal? Should I, maybe we'll try to empty out the email box by Labor Day. You think we can do it? Never. Mark's asking me if I look at it. I never look at it. He looks at it, and then he forwards everything to me. Why do I have you? If I didn't have you for all those years, then I looked at it, remember? I got things to do. And you better make sure you send me anything that's like a personal. Mark is now managing my personal life. You manage my work life, my personal life. Maybe you can just remind me. Oh, by the way, you've got dinner tonight. I'm just kidding. Okay. Here's somebody who writes in about meeting me last year at an event. By the way, the event that that person met me at was the worst event I've ever done. I got heckled by the crowd. I'm not kidding. It was for a nonprofit and I got heckled. It was horrible. I got heckled because it was for a nonprofit that does, it's like a food bank kind of organization. And I know the person who runs it. And it was beyond horrible. Like, I was sweating profusely in the middle of it. This guy stood up and basically said, how dare you come up here and do exactly what they were asked me to do, which is like sort of give an overview of the economy. You better put your money where your mouth is. Are you giving money to this organization? We don't need to hear your comments about what's going on in the economy. I mean, I've never felt like that before a live audience. It must be what a stand-up comedian feels like when he or she bombs. I bombed so badly that and the guy wouldn't stop. And parenthetically, nobody stopped him. It wasn't like that. It wasn't like I was threatened. Mark wants to know where security is. But it was like a very nice room full of people. And I was supposed to just, again, here was the mantra. Okay, Jill, what we want you to do is just give like an overview of the economy. Talk about why it's so important. Talk about poverty in America, what's happening, income inequality, which I did. and, you know, a little bit about, like, what's going on. And it was horrible. So that said, I do the whole thing, and the executive director comes up and apologizes to me. I was just not happy camper, and I went on with it. It was fine. Then find out later, the guy who heckled me wrote a massive check at the end of the night to the organization. So I don't know if I'm supposed to feel good or bad about that, but it was not a pleasant experience. Anyway, this person wrote in and said, met me at that event last year. And so here we go. I have a Roth IRA. I haven't invested anywhere because I want to make sure that I'm ethically investing my money. It's really important to me that I do not invest in companies or practices that destroy our planet or hurt society. I have a Roth IRA with Fidelity. Should I open one with at an ethical or socially responsible organization? I get nervous not having a true understanding of what to look for in terms of protecting my money and investment, but also want to make sure I'm being ethically sound. Hey, you know what? Maybe this is a good case for where you go to motif investing. Remember our buddy Hardeep? Hardeep Walia might be the right person for you. So go to motif investing. You can pick a motif and invest. You know, but I do get questions about socially responsible investing. And, you know, that's a big, broad umbrella. Environmental, maybe it's social, maybe it's governance, you know, corporate governance. I think the biggest issue with these platforms that are doing just that, like one type of investing, is that you might end up overweighting certain sectors of the economy, like healthcare or technology. And, you know, that's okay until something changes. I guess the other piece is that a lot of socially responsible mutual funds and platforms underperform their peers. Maybe you don't care about that. I've also know that a lot of the data that's used to assess a company's social responsibility is somewhat limited and, frankly, can be flawed. So there's no standard definition that's applied from the securities industry. And there's actually, I don't think there's like a real audit system to find out what they're reporting is valid. So I guess what I'm going to say to you about this is you should check it out. It's fine. Maybe it is. All right. So like the workaround is you don't invest socially, which makes you feel bad about yourself, but that you invest and make a lot of money and give money away to organizations that make you feel good about your value system. Anyway, socially responsible can be great. You know, just be careful. Maybe it's not all of your money. I don't know. Maybe that's sort of halfway doing. Maybe it doesn't count for you. I don't know. I think it's a really hard area because, again, no standards have been set forth, really. But anyway, check out Motif Investing, see if that works for you. Thanks for writing in. 855-411-JILL, that's our phone number, our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, love to hear from you. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. Our email address is askjill@jillonmoney.com. Okay, Jeff writes, I've been looking for a home for so long. There's just nothing for sale. Is it terrible to be a renter for life? No, it's not terrible to be a renter for life, but you're bringing up something that's really important right now, and that is the big challenge in the housing market is that there are not enough homes for sale. There just aren't. And what's interesting about it is that, you know, essentially what happened was during the financial crisis, the real estate meltdown, a bunch of private equity firms went in and scooped up distressed properties. Now, normally they would just flip them, and, you know, when the market recovered, all well and good, but they kept them. And what you find is that in a lot of the markets where they bought a ton of those homes, they're cranking up the rents. And rents are rising pretty steeply. At the same time, those houses are no longer available for sale, and that put pressure on inventory. Meanwhile, separately, new home construction has been focusing on the sort of mid to upper range because builders make more money on those homes, and because they had the sense that, you know, the first-time home buyer is going to be shut out of the market for a while. So here's the problem right now. We just have a lack of inventory. Inventory levels near historic lows, and prices are increasing, and incomes are only growing sort of marginally. So what does that mean? It means that either you better be very patient or you're going to have to go far afield. So Mark, you were very lucky to buy when you did. I mean, I think it's a little different when you have a lot of inventory. I think that in big cities, there's a lot of inventory. Whether you want to be in that inventory is up, you know, that's a totally different issue. But it is incredibly important for us to be clear that the big risk that you have in being a renter is that rent is subject to inflation. Okay? All right, stay tuned. We're going to have a cool CFP join us, Larry Stein. He'll be on the program next. And if you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.